कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर दारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर दारी यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, entitled Bhagavatam is the Answer to All Questions, Text 13. Eko nan tvam man vichan Yoga talpat samutitaha Viryam Hiranyamayam Devo Mayaya Vyasrajatrida Eko Nannam Tvamandichan Yoga Talpat Samuditaha Viryam Hiranmayam Devo Mayaya Vyasrajatrida Eko Nana Tvam Nandichan Yoga Talpat Samutitaha Viryam Hiranmayam Devo Mayaya Vyasrajatrida
Ekonanatvamandichan
Ekonanatvamandichan
Yoga talpat
Ekaha, he, one alone. Nanatvam, varieties. Anvichan, so desiring. Yogatalpat, from the bedstead of mystic slumber. Samutitaha, thus generated. Viryam, the semina, Hiranmayam, golden hue, Devaha, the demigod, Mayaya, by the external energy, Vyasrajat, perfectly created, Trida, in three features. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord, while lying on His bed of mystic slumber, generated the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy out of His desire to manifest varieties of living entities from Himself alone. Purports. In the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 9, Texts 7 and 8, the creation and annihilation of the material world are stated as follows. Sarva bhutani konteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpachaya punasthani kalpado vishamam maham prakritim svam asvashtabhya drishjami puna puna bhutagraman imam krishnam avasham prakritir vasat. At the end of each millennium, the creative forces, namely the material nature and the living entities who struggle in the material nature, all merge together into the transcendental body of the Lord. And again, when the Lord desires to manifest them, all of them are again displayed by the Lord. Therefore, the material nature is working under the control of the Lord. All of them, under the agency of material nature and under the control of the Lord, are thus repeatedly created and annihilated by the will of the Lord. As such, before the creation or manifestation of the material cosmic world, the Lord exists as total material, as total energy, Mahasamashti. And thus, desiring Himself to be diffused to many, He expands Himself further into multi-total energy, Samasti. From the multi-total energy, He further expands Himself into individuals in three dimensions, namely adhyatmik, adhidaivik, and adhivotik, as explained before, vyashti. As such, the whole creation and the creative energies are non-different and different simultaneously, because everything is an emanation from Him, the Mahavishnu or Mahasamashti. Nothing of the cosmic energies is different from him. But all such expanded energies have specific functions and display as designed by the Lord, and therefore they are simultaneously different from the Lord. The living entities are also similar energy, marginal potency of the Lord, and thus they are simultaneously one with and different from him. At the stage of non-manifestation, the living energies remain potent in the Lord, and when they are let loose in the cosmic manifestation, they are exhibited differently in terms of different desires under the modes of nature. Such differential manifestations of the living energies are conditional states of the living entities. The liberated living entities, however, in the Sanatan eternal manifestation, are unconditionally surrendered souls, and therefore they are not subject to the conditions of creation and annihilation. So this creation takes place by the glance of the Lord from his bedstead of mystic slumber. And thus all the universes and the Lord of the universe, Brahma, are again and again manifested and annihilated. Om Agyanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Scha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Guru Parampara. May Shishi Radhe Shyam be pleased, and may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. So again, this is Canto 2, Chapter 10. Entitled Bhagavatam is the Answer to All Questions. Text 13. The Lord, while lying on his bed of mystic slumber, generates the seminal symbol, golden in hue, through external energy, out of his desire to manifest varieties of living entities from himself alone. So in this, the first verse to this chapter, chapter 10, Shukadeva Goswami, he lists the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atra sargo visargas cha. There's the creation, primary creation, secondary creation. And then he gives a very brief explanation of each of the subjects. This is typical of the Puranas. This is not just a special feature of the Bhagavatam, but other Puranas as well. They cover these 10 subject matters. It's a characteristic of a Mahapurana to go through these 10 subjects, creation, liberation, protection, ashraya, what is the supreme shelter. So these subjects are typical of a Purana. And here in the second canto, we're mostly talking about the subject of Sarga. Sarga means the primary creation, which is coming from Mahavishnu. Why do we hear about these things? You know, Parikshit just has a few days to live, and such a technical subject matter, Mahavishnu and how the universe has come forth. But this is also the Lord's Leela. You know, there's Vaikuntha Leela, there's Vrindavan Leela, and there's Srishti Leela, the Leela of creation. Everything Krishna does, everything God does is Leela, is like a play, effortless activity. You know, we have this expression in English, all work and no play. But for God, this is reversed. It's all play and no work. It's all play. Even the way he creates, it's very interesting. It's very fascinating to see how the Lord decides to do things. And everything he does, he's moved by joy. In the spiritual world, everything he does, he's moved by joy. When he relates to the material energy, like in terms of, say, Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu, of course, is never in contact with the material energy, but he's still interacting. So he's being moved by what? By compassion for the living entities. So there's no question of work or hard work. But his nature is love, his nature is joy, his nature is compassion. And even in this example, this story we're hearing of Mahavishnu, we should know that the whole reason for him creating in this way and doing things in this way is out of compassion for the living beings. All of God's activities are completely transcendental. So when we hear any of them, if we're in the right state of mind, there's the potential to awaken spiritually. That's why when you hear from a pure devotee, it doesn't even matter so much what they're saying, but their vibration, because it's spiritual, it has the power to raise you to your spiritual level, to a spiritual level. But sometimes you hear Prabhupada and a morning walk, a conversation, whatever it may be, something he says suddenly wakes you up. Because whatever a pure devotee says, whatever the Bhagavatam says, it's of another spiritual level. And it has the power. We're usually on a lower level. I'm usually on a lower level of vibration. But sometimes you can tune in. You can try to open your heart, open your ears, and then suddenly you're lifted up. You can be raised up. So anything in the Bhagavatam has this potential, including this Srishti Leela. We're hearing about Mahavishnu. We may think this is a strange topic, and maybe this is a little boring, this is a little technical, whatever we may be thinking, but actually if we just hear attentively with faith, with an open heart, this pastime as well, this Leela as well, can give us so many realizations, can wake us up, connect us to the Lord. You know, any one thing that's said on the spiritual level from a pure source, it can even give us a whole picture, even though one thing is being said. You know, this is like described in Bhagavatam, Advayam Gyan. Advayam Gyan means undivided knowledge. In the spiritual world, the information, the knowledge, the objects, it's Advayam. It's not divided like it is down here. You know, like down here, the way we learn things, we gather some information, you take some notes, you put this together, you put that together, you try to figure out in your mind. Everything's divided and broken up. Vyasti is mentioned here also in the purport. Like we have Vyas. Vyasti means to divide, division. The material level is sometimes referred to as Vyasti because everything is divided here. Everything is fragmented. But as soon as you come to the spiritual platform, everything is actually connected. Samasti. Sama. Everything is one. So that means when a pure devotee is speaking one thing, one specific thing, because it's of the spiritual nature and energy, it can reveal the whole to you. That's why Prabhupada said about the Krishna book, if you can understand just one paragraph, you can realize Krishna. If you can understand one sentence, you can realize Krishna. If you can understand one word, how is that? You ever think about that? Prabhupada said, if you can understand one word from the Krishna book, you can realize Krishna. Because it's all about the glorification of Krishna, and it's coming from a pure devotee's vibration, totally pure, and contained in that vibration is Krishna. And so just one word heard correctly can give you an experience of Krishna. Because it's coming from a person whose heart is fully absorbed in Krishna. So any word they speak has that power. So Advayam, undivided, non-dual, is non-dual jnana. Bhagavatam is full of this. So this is a great benefit. So hearing these pastimes as well, there's this possibility when we're tuned in. You know, and it's not just an effort of the will, now I'll tune myself in. There needs to be some grace, but there has to be something done on our part. Some attention, some focus, some trust. And then the spiritual energy can enter into us, change us. This is the only way to really be changed in this material world. We try to change ourselves. Everyone in the material world is trying to improve something or find some solution. But it's all within the modes of nature. So it's just a temporary shift. You can go from ignorance, lift it up just a little bit with passion. You can go from passion to goodness. But goodness, in the Bhagavad Gita explains, goodness is not pure or stable. It also has passion in it. It also has ignorance in it. So it's just a matter of time. They're just shifting the modes. And whatever way you improve within the modes of nature, you move to goodness, but goodness still contains passion and ignorance. It's just a matter of time before you swing back down. So what is our hope? We have to realize that we're completely bound within the limits of the modes of nature and open ourselves to transcendental topics, objects, subjects, hearing from a transcendental source, the pure devotee, the holy name, completely spiritual. It's Krishna himself. There's another, I was saying anciently, this idea of Advayam, undivided. Just the word Krishna has all of Krishna. Another example of that. So spiritual life is about, it's a process to become receptive to the spiritual energy. Because we can't perform bhakti, we can't do bhakti, we can't produce bhakti, but we can prepare ourselves so that bhakti, shakti, enters our life, enters our heart, and actually takes over our senses. Our senses right now, we're being moved by the modes of nature within our consciousness. But once you open to the spiritual energy, then your senses become taken over by the spiritual energy and just begin to naturally and spontaneously serve. So another benefit of this Srishti Lila is that it also gives us the right feeling of ourselves. You know, generally we're very, you know, I can see myself, I'm very self-absorbed in very petty things, very small things down here in my life, my worry. Right, what's the little worry that's on your mind right now? Something happening? Some concern, some fear, some desire that we want fulfilled, some fear that it's not fulfilled. We're kind of caught in a very petty world, our own world, my world. And things, you know, in the moment, things seem so important to us. Like, you know, a few months ago, there was some problem with my car and had to pay something, and I was so upset that it was this loss of money suddenly. A loss of money. But a few months pass and you completely forget about that. Right? Think about your suffering from 3 years ago, 4 years ago, five, those little problems that were so draining and so occupying, they're gone. They just pass with time, and in the moment we take it so seriously. But a few months pass, you completely forget it. So the Bhagavatam here in this Srishti Lila, it just it suddenly we get the broadest possible view of things. And that's helpful for us. It gives us the right feeling. Because the feeling is, I'm so small. And how great is the Lord. And I'm here lost in all my little problems. But listen to this. The Lord as Mahavishnu, this gigantic form, he's breathing out and all the universes are coming. Breathing back in, they enter back into his body. We enter back into the body of Mahavishnu. And this sort of lifts us out of our small world. It gives us a right feeling. Otherwise, we usually have the wrong feeling. The wrong feeling is that I'm just in the center and I'm absorbed in all these things in my life. They're so important to me, but they're not so important. In one sense, they're not important. In another sense, you can say everything is important. Once you awaken spiritually, you can say everything is important. But before that time, nothing is really important. Because it's just the modes moving and changing. So all the events in this material world, they're only important when you awaken spiritually and you use them for your spiritual advancement. But before that time, if we're asleep in material consciousness and all these things are happening and now there's this happening in this part of the world and that, it's all like non-events. They're like non-events. Because it's just the modes moving and it'll change. It'll pass. Something new will come up. But once we get the mercy of a pure devotee and knowledge is given and a path is given, then everything can be important in a sense, because we can see, we can understand everything with a spiritual vision, we can get realizations, we can get understanding. When something comes into my life, I can see it as the mercy of God, and that way be benefited by it, even if it's difficult. So we get the, you know, here we get this right feeling that, oh my God, I'm so small, and here is Mahavishnu and his powers. And it's his lila, he's playing with this creation. So from a very narrow viewpoint, it becomes so broad, so large. You know, there's a story in the Bible of Job. And it's very interesting. Job is also, he was a very righteous person. He was dedicated to God. But then he was tested in his life. And many challenges came, great challenges came from our point of view. He lost loved ones that were killed. He lost his possessions, his home collapsed from a storm. So he is in a state where he was giving so much to God. He was serving God, but finally he asked that question that we often ask when we're suffering. Why? Why is this happening? Why me? I've tried to be good. I've tried to serve you, Lord. My family is gone, my possessions are gone, my means of income, you know, he had land and he had animals. Everything was lost and he was just totally broken. And he was thinking about his life and he was feeling this pity, this self-pity for what's happened to him, and his mind was just absorbed in all these things of his world. And then God speaks to him. And it's so interesting because he doesn't come down to the level of Job and talk about all the things that happened in his life. God speaks. It says that he speaks in the form of a whirlwind. It was not that he saw God, but there was a kind of storm, and then the voice of God came through that storm. That's how it's described. The voice of God is non-different from God, so this is a kind of darshan also. So God speaks to him, and this is what he says. Interesting to understand why he speaks this way, but he just starts saying things like, Job, where were you when I created the foundation of this earth? Where were you when I stretched the skies? Where were you when I brought forth the wind into this world? Where were you when I gave the ability to fly to the hawks in the sky? In other words, he's pointing out, you know, I've created everything, this earth, all the planets, all the powers that people have. So I've invested them with power. All the living, he said, where are you when I feed every living entity every day? So he's showing Job that you're caught in this little world of your little problems. Here's my position. I'm all powerful. And Job, he, even though he was stuck in this kind of conception of his own world and his own problems, he's just lifted up into the greatness of God. And he becomes overwhelmed. He's lifted out of his problems by hearing about the glories of God. So in that story, God is not coming down to his world and talking about what's happened and I will help you out and so forth, but he just speaks about his own power, and Job's mind is just blown. And by his mind being blown in that way, he's lifted up to the Lord, to the greatness, to the opulence, the Aishvarya feature of the Lord. Wow, he's, think about that for a moment. Everything that we see has come from the body of God. All the powers that we have, the ability in man, Krishna says, I am the ability in man. And all these things that are happening, it's the Lord's transcendental energies acting in this world. This is also a kind of meditation on the Lord. So where were you, Job, when I did these things? Your life is so small. You have no idea what I do, what I can do. For a long time, we want God to come into our world. Just look at our prayers, usually, right? I'm speaking for myself, of course, but you look at our prayers, and it's asking God to come into my little world with my issues, and please help me out here. Please solve this. Please resolve this. Please intervene in this situation. Please help me do this. Please take this away. But there's a shift in spiritual life when instead of asking God to come into my world, there becomes a desire. I want to enter into your world. What's your world? What do you do? Allow me entrance into that world. You know, the whole, you know, most people, their relationship with God is pulling God down into my world. Serve me. That's what we're saying. Serve me. But when this shifts and it's suddenly, allow me to serve you, you see the example of a pure devotee. Just engage in serving, happily serving God, wanting nothing else, just service. So we have to go from this consciousness of, God, how can you serve me right now? I've got so many things happening. To God, how can I serve you? So here in this section, we're seeing the world, the activities of Mahavishnu. And we can try to visualize, you know, just imagine there's the eternal, it's mentioned in this purport, the eternal spiritual sky. And in one small area in that sky, there is a dark cloud that keeps forming and dissipating, and then forming again and dissipating. Eternal spiritual sky, unlimited, infinite, but one corner, this is what's happening. There's this cloud forming, and then it's gone, and then it's forming, and then it's gone. And that's the total material energy coming and going again and again. And who is the predominating deity of that pastime? Is Mahavishnu. He rules this pastime. He orchestrates this pastime. It's the Lord. His Leela is also here in this dark corner of the eternal sky. It's the Lord Mahavishnu. This is his rulership. He's the Lord of all material universes. The Lord of each universe is Garbhodakashai Vishnu. And the Lord of each living entity is Chirodakashai Vishnu, the Paramatma. So Mahavishnu is the Lord of all universes, Garbhodakashai, each universe separately. And then the Lord of the heart, Chirodakashai Vishnu. So the Lord is everywhere, doing everything. And it's described here. He's lying in the causal ocean. It's called the causal ocean, the ocean of causes, because everything's going to come forth very soon. You know, you have cause and effect, cause and effect. But the original causes of this whole universe are contained in the, with Mahavishnu in the causal ocean. Therefore, it's called causal. It's where the original causes lie dormant, invisible at first and dormant. But they'll start to come forth. And he's in a mystic slumber, it says here, which is his state of yoga nidra. It is a transcendental state. It's not like our sleep. We also have our slumber. It's not mystical. It's just the mode of ignorance acting on us. But the Lord here is Mahavishnu. He's lying in the causal ocean in this mystic slumber. And all of the jivas are inside of him. It's not their first time being inside of him. They go out and they come back in. And they go out and they and how long has this been going on? It says anadi. No beginning to this. Anadi. Sometimes we say, since time immemorial. We can also say beginningless, because anadi means with no beginning. So this coming from Mahavishnu, going back into him, coming back out, this is going on perpetually. This is going on. But here it's described, we're in the body of this Mahavishnu who's in a mystic slumber. And he's the masculine principle. And there's Prakriti, which is the feminine principle. And then there's the glance of the Lord, which is the seminal principle, as described here. The seminal symbol. The glance of the Lord contains the jivas. And it contains time, the jivas, and all of the jivas' destinies are contained in the glance of the Lord. And he throws that glance onto the feminine principle, Prakriti, and then everything starts to come forth. So he's the masculine, the Purusha. And he has the seed, just like a man has the seed. And by impregnating a woman, and then so many things, then things come forth, then the children. So this is happening for us because it happens to the Supreme Lord on a higher level, on a higher scale. This is the way he does it, and therefore it's also the way we do it. It's a reflection of it. So the glance, his glance, comes. And it contains the jivas. And think about that. It contains the jivas and all of the jivas' destinies. All of our destinies is already set. Our material destinies. What's going to happen? Not just one life. All the lives that will come forth. They're already there inside of us. Inside the Lord. And then they come out. Therefore it says all the destinies of the living entities are within Mahavishnu. You know, there's a place, if you go to India, you can go to meet with these brahmanas called the Bhrigus. They're descendants of Bhrigu Rishi. And you might think one day, I'm going to go see them and find out about my life and my future. They're like astrologers. And when you go there, I heard this from a couple of friends who went there. I never went there, but I heard from some devotees who went to see these Bhrigus. That when they arrived, the first thing that these Bhrigus said, these brahmanas, they said, oh, there you are, we've been expecting you. They're already aware who's coming and when. And they even may prepare in advance, they have already, they go back to a room, they have all these palm leaves, old palm leaves, with your story on it. Your story is there, my story is there. They figure out, because of your birth date, the moment of your birth, there's already something written. And they go back, and sometimes they already have the palm leaf because they knew you were coming, and they have it ready to tell you some things that you want to hear. And they come and they tell you some things about your past. That's hard to verify, of course. We can't remember our past. But they'll tell you about the present, how many children you have, who you're married to, what you do for a living. All this is given by them. And then they can tell you some things about your future. It's also there. On a palm leaf, in a back room. This is the descendants of Bhrigu Rishi. For generations, they've been doing this. Which means our material life, our material, what's going to happen to us is already there. It's already there, so we don't have to give it that much attention. We do our duty. Do the best you can. Do the work you're meant to do. Try to be responsible. But the happiness and distress that's coming is already set. So rather than getting your mind absorbed in that, thinking that you can change it, then you get your absorbed, you turn your mind towards Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's glories. This is what Prahlad Maharaj says. Actually, I have this verse I wanted to read. Prahlad says the same thing. Yes, I think you're right. I have to look because I can't memorize. Yes. Sukha mandriyakam daitya deha yogena dehinam sarvatra labhyate daivat yatha dukham ayatnataha. Prahlad Maharaj continued, "My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress." The happiness is coming automatically, the distress is coming automatically. The feeling that I'm doing it and I'm causing it is an illusion. So somebody might say, well, what if I do nothing? Then we'll see what any happiness come to me if I do nothing. But then you'll notice that person can't do nothing. They can say that. What if I do nothing, then will things come to me? But we'll see. We won't be able to do nothing for very long because of the svabhav, the nature will force us to act. And again, the actions will come and the results will come. We always create some idea, what if I do this instead of that? But actually, you can't really get around it. It's the material happiness and distress is already there. So we should have a responsible attitude towards it and do the best we can, because we have to admit we don't have realization of these things. So we still have to do our duties and our activities. We want to do it in a certain way, sattvically, detached action, being responsible, being kind, all these things we have to try to do. I'll read a little of this purport as well from Prahlad's teachings to his classmates. Prabhupada says, in the material world, in any form of life, there's some called happiness, there's some so-called happiness and so-called distress. No one invites distress in order to suffer, but still it comes. Similarly, even if we do not endeavor to obtain the advantages of material happiness, we shall obtain them automatically. This happiness and distress are obtainable in any form of life without endeavor. Thus, there is no need to waste time and energy fighting against distress or working very hard for happiness. Our only business in the human form of life should be to revive our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become qualified to return home back to Godhead. Material happiness and distress come as soon as we accept the material body, regardless of what form. We cannot avoid such happiness and distress under any circumstance. The best use of human life, therefore, lies in reviving our relationship with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So, all of this is contained, all of our future, everything is contained in the glance of Mahavishnu. And he, with his glance, he impregnates Prakriti, the material energy, and then all the subtle ingredients. Upadana, all the ingredients, upadana, they start to develop. Mahavishnu breathes out and all the universes come out. And in this way, the nitya-baddha jivas, eternally conditioned jivas, are again united with the material environment. The universes are coming from Mahavishnu, also the jivas are in the glance, and there's a union between the nitya-baddha jivas and the material creation, again and again. And we're withdrawn from it, and then we're back. Actually, you know, Mahavishnu is said to be in deep sleep, this Sushupti Shakti. He's the Lord of Sushupti Shakti, which is the energy of deep sleep. And then it's said that this material creation and all the jivas, as they come forth, this is like his dream. Saying that something like we are something like in the dream, we are in the dream of Mahavishnu. And we're also dreaming because, you know, we're identifying with this body, with this mind, it's also like a dream. So the whole only point is to wake up, is to wake up. The pure devotees are just wandering this material universe everywhere and giving this message to wake up Lord Chaitanya, Jeev Jago. He saw when Lord Chaitanya was doing Harinam through the different villages, he saw some people, they were getting up in the morning and starting their businesses, selling different things, and that's when he was saying, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. Wake up, sleeping souls, you're in the lap of illusion, you're in the lap of Maya, dreaming, dreaming. But take this holy name of the Lord, it will wake you up. So this material world, what is it? Is it a curse or is it a blessing? It's depending on our state of consciousness that we'll see it either as a curse or as a blessing. If we're self-absorbed, if we're absorbed in my own world and my own plans, then it's a curse because we notice that everything goes against that. Things go against that sometimes. Right? You have some desires, some plans, and it's frustrated by the material energy. And so it just feels like life is, this material world is just a curse. And what happens is when you, we may not put it in these words, but when you have certain desires to fulfill and it's getting frustrated by the material energy, eventually we start to feel this resentment in our hearts. Resentment becomes established in our hearts. We resent life. We resent God for the way things are. I have desires and plans and they're being frustrated. And all living beings in this material world, in this conditioned state, they're walking around with a very subtle, they may not be aware of it, they could seem to be happy people, nice people, but there's a resentment in the heart because the world is going against my desires. That's the ego, the ego's consciousness, that I'm in the center, and it's being frustrated, therefore I feel anger. There's anger there. Sometimes it comes out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's almost like we're in a state of anger, a state of resentment. And either, how do you respond when there's that resentment in the heart? Either you just keep fighting in this material world, you keep trying, or you become resigned. And both are depressing alternatives. Because, you know, basically Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you either become an exploiter. You can even, when you have resentment in your heart, it can take two forms. You can become a bully, or you can become a coward. You can become an exploiter, or you can become exploited by others. You could become aggressive, or you can withdraw and become stepped on. Those are the two alternatives in material consciousness when there's resentment in the heart. You either have to, by your will, you have to force something. I'm going to be an exploiter, not an exploited. I'm not going to be exploited, so therefore I'm going to exploit. And when you're tired of exploiting, sometimes then you get exploited, and then you take that role. So it's always these two choices in the material world, in material consciousness, with a resentful heart. You can either force yourself and become, you know, which is more like the mode of passion. You become aggressive about life. You keep fighting, whatever it takes, I'm going to survive. And then the mode of ignorance. You may be in that mode, which is that you're just beat up by the energy and you just become, allow yourself to be exploited. You become weak. You become used, abused, whatever it may be. So that's it. Those are the two alternatives, not very good option, right? Therefore, there's another option, as Prahlad Maharaj was just saying, that these things, we withdraw our mind from this absorption in these dualities. There's another duality, being exploited or being the exploiter. And we absorb the consciousness in the spiritual energy of Krishna. Krishna, we absorb our minds there. And we think, you know, how do you get rid of that resentment from the heart that gives you those two alternatives? We have, by the mercy of a devotee, we just start to learn. We have to hear. It's not about me, actually. It's not about me fulfilling my desires, my material desires. It's not about my plan. But what is the plan of the Lord? How do I align myself with the plan of the Lord? Then we're overcoming resentment. Because resentment keeps us locked into the problem is I'm in the center and I'm frustrated, therefore I resent the creation, I resent God, I resent other people because they interfere with my plan. So you do away with that resentment by shifting into it's not about me, it's about Krishna's plan, which comes through the pure devotee. They're operating within Krishna's plan. And we can link ourselves to such persons and then start serving in that way. And we're overcoming this resentment in the heart. Therefore, sarga, atra sargo visargas cha, stanam, the next topic. So you have creation, primary creation, secondary creation. The next, which is the creation of Lord Brahma, the secondary creation. Then you have the next topic of Bhagavatam is stanam, which means, okay, so now the creation has come forth. What's the right situation for all the living entities within this creation? Stanam. The verse describing stanam, also in this beginning of this chapter, it gives a little more information. Stitir Vaikuntha Vijaya. The right position, the right frame of mind for all living beings, it's given in this verse describing what stanam means. It says that to acknowledge that the Lord of Vaikuntha is supreme. Basically, to acknowledge that God is God and I'm not God. That's stanam. Stitir Vaikuntha Vijaya. The Lord of Vaikuntha is the actual Lord. When all the living beings and all the planetary systems, when they acknowledge that, then after the create, because the creation comes forth, so you have sarga, visarga, stanam. Creation, first the primary creation, Mahavishnu, then Lord Brahma, and then all living beings, then the planets are there. And now what's the right position for everybody is to be in the consciousness that the Lord of Vaikuntha is supreme. That attitude, that consciousness puts things right. Which means we have to align with the plan of the Lord. So we have to align with the Lord's plan. And here, what is the Lord's plan in this creation, creating the material world? It says that this one Supreme Lord expands into many. You know, there's that verse also, Ekoham Bahusyam, that the one decides to become many. Why? For the purpose of relationship. That's it. God here, the one Mahavishnu, all the forms are coming from him. Why is this happening? What's his plan? What's his purpose in this? Is that so he can interact with his expansions, through relationship. That's the purpose, rasa. And relationship always means voluntary, a voluntary uniting. Krishna wants to unite with us, and once we want to unite with Krishna, then things are in the right position. But if I'm turning away from Krishna and I'm thinking me and my relationships, then I'm in the wrong position and we come under the laws of nature. In this material world, God's will is only coming to most people in the form of the material laws. He has his own will. He has his own desires to interact, to be playful, to love, to serve his devotees, and the devotees are serving him. It's a very sweet, eternal relationship. But when we're so cut off from that, then how does God's will manifest to me in this world when I'm so cut off? It manifests as material laws, like karma. That's also God's will. And there's also goodness in it. There's also compassion in it. But I'm so disconnected that I can't experience actually a loving relationship. I'm just experiencing the stringent laws of this material world. That's how God's will comes to me in this world. But God doesn't, he's not satisfied with that. Even the Mahavishnu here. Mahavishnu, the one becomes many for the purpose of relating. And therefore he expands as the super soul into all of our hearts. And he stays with us. The Paramatma is there with the Jiva. And what is the? How does the Paramatma relate to the Jiva? Just waiting. That's all. That's all we get when we're totally cut off and we're in our self-absorbed worlds. You just get a Lord who's just looking towards you, waiting, with loving eyes, waiting. Like the Upanishad says, two birds in the tree. Just waiting for you to turn. And once you turn, then we can talk about other kinds of relationships with the Lord. And then, because the Lord wants that. The possibility of relationships are completely amazing. You can become parental love for the Lord. You can become a friend of the Lord. So all of that is possible, because that's the only point of this whole creation, is the Lord in relationship with his expansions, just expanding, just relating in love. And so even this material world is for that purpose. That's his purpose. Therefore, it's described here, ekoham bahusyam, that the one becomes many for the purpose of relationship, rasa. So, I'll stop here. A couple minutes left. If anyone has any thoughts, corrections, comments, questions.
Hare Krishna, that was wonderful. I want to share that I was just reading that the Lord shares his mystic powers, his mystic powers with all living entities, all of his jivas. And Prabhupada gives the examples of frogs being able to breathe under the earth, trees eating with their legs. He gives the example of how strong grass is, that if we were trampled as much as grass, we wouldn't survive. Mm. And in this way, he shares his achintya shakti with everybody. What to speak of the bees, the ants, the spiders, what goes on in the ocean, the jungle. So anytime we see these amazing things going on in the universe, we should remember that it's Krishna's mystic powers.
Yes.
He's giving samples.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is called Vibhuti Yoga, connecting with the Lord through his vibhutis, through his great powers in the material creation. That chapter is about that. It shows how Krishna is giving the power, and his opulences are all within the material creation. And if you meditate on them and see that connection, you're performing Vibhuti Yoga. Yes,
thank you very much, Prabhu. Very wonderful class. And like you mentioned, that we should try to enter into the world of Supreme Lord rather than asking him to help us, right?
Yeah.
So, and probably you also mentioned about astrology. So, as a devotee, like whether a devotee should believe and follow in astrology?
Well, for astrology, if we have the guidance of a Vaishnav, if the astrologer is a Vaishnav, then they can, you know, they give some indication of things, but they also still have a very strong spiritual perspective. And then by that guidance, it can be okay. It's not essential that we need it. You know, it's not essential that we have to go there. But if there's some things maybe that we can find maybe helpful to work some things out or just understand something, at least we take the shelter of a devotee who's doing that service, and they'll have a perspective that can guide us where it's not actually producing another. You know, they say sometimes you want to get a thorn out of your, let's say your foot, you step on a thorn, and you take another thorn, and you try to get it out, and then suddenly you have two thorns in your foot. So astrology can be like that too for some people. Without a spiritual perspective, they get involved in astrology. What happens is they're always thinking, oh my God, this is going to happen on this day in the future. They become more worried, more self-absorbed. They won't make any plans unless they talk to their astrologer. They can't figure out, you know, it's like you're losing all your own power and your own trust in the Lord. And so some people get totally further entrapped in astrology. But a devotee, you know, a devotee astrologer can give some guidance, indication, and they always keep Krishna. We know that there are many planets, but there's the Krishna planet, Prabhupada says. In Bhagavatam, he says, there is the Krishna planet, the most powerful of all planets. If you connect yourself to Krishna, then everything will be provided for. Everything will be taken care of. So that trust, that's a very deep faith also. So different ways. We have to see what we need and where we're at, but at least one has to go through an astrologer who is Krishna conscious and who is on that path.
Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank
you. I appreciate you in the beginning. You said that God is so great, we are so small, and you emphasize through some example. And it's true, especially the devotees. If they focus on the greatness of God, their problem actually become very small. Mm. It happened to me in my own life. It's not just the philosophy, the application actually transform our consciousness. Trust, faith develops more. One point also you said about when Mahavishnu already created destiny for all the soul. In one sense, yes, am I the maker of my destiny or life is predestined? Both. We don't accept just one. Because ultimately the soul, destiny, cannot be chalked or, cannot be predetermined by God. It is soul ultimate destiny to annihilate their existence here by their own choice. Krishna doesn't intervene, neither the demigods or even guru or anybody. I have to decide that I want to get out. And then I take shelter of Guru, Krishna. And then the whole existence dissolves. So even Krishna cannot, I mean, he can, ultimately he's the cause of all the causes, but he does not intervene. So in that sense, we are maker of our destiny and is also predestined. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Like Mahavishnu, it's not that he's creating the destinies of the living entities, but their previous actions are created by themselves, but it's contained within Mahavishnu and he just lets it out. But it's really the jiva who's, you know, how we're interacting with the modes, what we're doing, how we're thinking, how we're acting, that is creating the destiny. Like that? Yeah, yeah, it's a good point, Prabhu. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Hare Krishna.